Okay, let's get this audio conference underway. Welcome to the Term 1 Geothermal Power Field Trip. I'm Donald Balloon's teacher, and it's Wednesday the 1st of March. Welcome to our listening schools. If you're listening to an archive of this audio conference, remember you can browse the website as you listen. Now, this is our first audio conference on geothermal power, and our topic is about any aspect of that. And we're sitting right here in the Taupo Volcanic Zone, right in Wairaki, just overlooking the steam field here. And I can see pipework, expansion joints, silencers, flash plants, well heads extending into the distance, and the glorious, glorious day. Now with me is Sam Cook, and I'll get Sam to... Hi, Sam, and tell us what you do.
Thanks, Donald. I'm the Steamfield Asset Manager at the Geothermal Group, and we look after the Wairaki, Ohaki and Poihipi steam fields. And basically, as an asset manager, we look after the maintenance of the steam field equipment. We operate the steam plant and get the steam out of the ground through the transmission pipes and down to the station so they can generate power with it.
And Sam and I, because we're on a site like this, we've hard hats, high vis vests, overalls, you know, or at least long clothing, you know, when you're around these hot places. Now, Sam and Elizabeth Whitelock have had us out looking in the steam field, and we've been had the most interesting morning. I've actually sat inside a steam pipe. I've been up close to a new wellhead. I didn't realise that when you got four wellheads about 10 metres apart, that some of them actually divert about 10... Well, no, they go down about 700 metres and then sideways about a kilometre. So I thought that was quite remarkable drilling. Now, glorious day as well. So the steam is disappearing into the air pretty quickly and it's not hanging around. Now, Gowran College, you've managed to join us yet? Okay, well, we'll just... Audrey, if you could just ask their first question, then hopefully they'll be with us.
Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, we can, Sam.
Yes. Sam DeMello, from Gowran College, and I've got our 13 physics students here ready to ask some questions. And the first one's from Charlotte.
Okay, I'm Charlotte Guttenbrunner, and my question is, how many employees work at this power plant?
Oh, hi, Charlotte. Donald here. Good question. I'll give it to Sam. You sound great here. Great to have you along.
Hi, Charlotte. How many employees work at the power plant? We have about 68 full-time employees, and that covers all sorts of disciplines from admin to management. We have fitters, electricians, technicians, and also plant operators. We also have about on any one day, up to 60 contractors that work on site. So we keep a skeleton staff of our own permanent staff and utilise a lot of contractors for day-to-day work. We run three power stations, the Ohaki, Wairaki and Poihipi power stations from a central control room at Wairaki. And at nights and in the weekend, there's only two people on site, two operators, which look after those three power stations.
So for Charlotte, Sam, two operators could run three power stations and they're not even at the power stations. Sam's nodding, Charlotte. Okay, you didn't see that. Charlotte, did you get to hear the introduction when I said where I was? Oh, good, excellent. Okay, who's going to ask your second question?
That would be me. And my name is Sam Adams Fay, and my question is, on average, how much does it cost to run a power plant?
Sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Sam.
Sam, is it?
Yep.
Yes, Sam, the budget for running the three power stations is about $16 million. And so that split the bigger proportion to run the Wairaki power station, being the older power station, so it requires a lot more maintenance, and a smaller portion to run the other two power stations. And it also covers just the day-to-day running.
Cheers.
Now, who's going to ask your third question, please?
That'll be me, Rebecca Mitchell. And my question is, what are the jobs available, especially what type of engineers are employed, and what are the qualifications needed to work in this power plant, a Bachelor of Engineering or a Bachelor of Science?
Yeah, hi Rebecca. We have a number of jobs available on site. As I mentioned before, we have the trades, fitters, electricians, technicians. We also have a geothermal resources group, which study what's happening underground and where the steam is so we can go drilling for it. And for them, that's more of a Bachelor of Science degree to enter into that field. We also have a lot of mechanical engineers and electrical engineers. So we're looking at Bachelor of Engineering and for mechanical and electrical. Our plant operators are sort of at NZCE level, and that's sort of prerequisite to bring them on board. So we have a number of different jobs on site.
And I think the fourth question is for me.
Yes, it's my question, Donald. This is Sam DeMello speaking. Now, we did a bit of research on the website, and we did find out what qualifications that you had, but what kind of interview was it? What were your skills that got you this job?
Very good question, Sam. Well, really, I'm a teacher. I think that's one thing you've got to be. It's about the learns program that you're asking. And you've got to be a teacher and you've got to love teaching. And you've got to love your subject areas. And you've got to be able... Well, if you take me, I was a biology teacher and I've had to learn physics. And I love it. I must say I love the chemistry as well, but I'm a bit keen on the sciences. The physics, last year I had to sit down and... go through the exams, you know, NCEA level 3, and I had to do my own work, sit the papers, and then mark it from the model answers. So that was quite a challenge. And you should have seen me sitting down. I had my calculator out, the instruction manual for the calculator, the textbook, and the exam paper all lined up across the desk. So it would have looked a bit a laugh if someone had walked in. But the other thing about this job is that the amazing thing about the LEARNS program is that I had 2 seasons in Antarctica, and the LEARNS program started in Antarctica. And when I spoke about Antarctica in my classroom, the kids just ate out of your hand. The students just loved it. They loved the stories, and it really added something to the science, I think. And the LEARNS program enabled me to do that. Like you with your physics, we hope that the physics that you're doing and the geography later today, that at Garin College you'll actually be able to extend your subjects out into the field, like, you know, with Sam here with his boots and hard hat on.
Thank you, Donald. If you're thinking of retiring, I might be interested in applying for your job.
Okay, Sam. The kids won't want to leave you. Well, you know, students don't want you to go. Right, next question, please.
Yeah, g'day, my name's Simon, Holly Burns, and I was wondering, what is the average yearly salary that a power plant worker would have?
Yeah, hi, Simon. The average salary is around about 70K, which is just fairly reasonable. You have the lower end and the upper end. And on top of that, if you're happen to be an operator, you can shift allowance and overtime on top of that. So your final take-home pay would probably be a little bit better than that, but that's fairly average for a power station employee.
Okay, man. Cheers.
Now, question 6, please.
My name's Mark Borlase, and I was wondering what kind of maintenance is required at the plant. Like, is there any sort of monthly overhaul or anything like that?
We have three main sections of maintenance that we carry out within the plant. And the first one is condition monitoring. And what's covered under that is routine vibration scanning of bearings to see that they're in good order. We test the oil to make sure there's no contaminants. And we also do visual inspections on a routine basis.
And by doing that condition monitoring, we're keeping a close eye on the plant all the time. We understand when something's going wrong and we can actually get in and fix it before it actually fails. Our next area of maintenance is defect maintenance, and that's actually something has failed. And even though we're monitoring it, sometimes, you know, you get a steam leak, it comes through a pipe or a blown gasket. So they just occur, and we have to factor in to get that repaired and use the people, our own staff or contractors, to repair. Could be anything from a pump to a gasket. And our final area of maintenance is major overhauls. And every 4 years we take our steam plant out of service and we pull it all to bits and inspect it internally. We get some erosion from, we get a little bit of sand and stones that come up with the steam from the well bores. They impact on any bends and they tend to erode it away, so we have to inspect that internally. We look at changing the gaskets, and we do that every 4 years. In the station, our overhaul maintenance on the turbines is about every 5 years. And we completely strip down the turbine, pull the rotor out, and inspect all the components of the turbine for wear.
Now, Michael, it's Donald here. We've got one great thing about Lewin's field trip is you get some neat chances to see stuff. And either this afternoon or tomorrow, we're going to have a look inside a turbine. And it's a mixed pressure turbine that's apart. And we've just turned up at a time when we can actually look inside a turbine. And it really is where physics meets art. I mean, they're just remarkable inside. You look at the way that engineers have built these things and the materials that they've used, and we'll get some video of it and put it on the website, but they're just amazing inside. And when Sam was talking about the maintenance, it really is quite special here. This whole power plant is... just provided electricity for so long for New Zealand. Right, question seven, and then we'll have the competition close.
G'day, Michael Bentley here. My question is, how many women work at the plant? What type of jobs do they perform? Is there a safety requirement for their hair? Thank you.
Yeah, we actually have five women at present working with us. We have a couple in admin, and one is an environmental advisor. As you can imagine, with resource consenting, environmental is quite a big issue for us. And we also have a process technician. And as far as the hair goes, generally it's not really a problem, but for safety precautions, it doesn't matter if you're male or female. If you've got long hair and you're actually working near rotating equipment, you have to have it up in a hairnet. So it doesn't matter who you are, the same rules apply.
And remember that Elizabeth Whitelock is our minder today. Elizabeth is out with us here and giving us advice on what we can and can't do, what's safe, and also helping us with the technical things. Now, the competition. This is for a magnificent $12,000 Polycom sound station. Sorry, $1,200 Polycom sound station, courtesy of Contact Energy and ASNET Technologies. Now, what you have to do is you have to find the answer on each day, on Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, and fill out the online entry form. And I'll give you three clues each day for a one feature, object or concept to do with geothermal power. So here are today's three clues. The first clue is, I separate water and steam. The second clue is, I work by a drop in pressure. And the third clue is, I create flashed steam. Now, we might have mentioned what the answer is already, or it might be coming up, and it'll be in my diary as well. So, you can get the answers for each day, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and have a go at that. And you've just got to have it done by the 20th of March. Right, we're up to question eight.
Hi, I'm Rachel Clark, and I wanted to know how big the turbines are.
Yeah, hi, Rachel. At Wairakei, we have 10 turbines, and they range from 4.5 megawatts is our smallest PRV turbine, up to 33 megawatts. And at the other two sites, we have turbines that range from 11.2 megawatts up to 55 megawatts.
Sam, if Rachel stood next to it, how physically big would it be? I suppose we've got to look at the shaft in the middle with the blades on it. We're not quite sure. Are you tall, Rachel?
Not really.
Okay, right. Anyway, if Rachel stood next to a turbine...
Yes, if it stood next to a turbine, if you look at the turbine and the generator, it's the larger turbines are sort of the size of an Arctic truck unit, and the smaller turbines are something like an SUV, some Toyota Surf or something like that.
So the nitty-gritty, Rachel, is that you could probably walk around inside one. I mean, you can get an SUV in an Arctic truck, so they're physically big. Right, question number 9.
Hi, my name is Ross Gallagher, and I want to know...
Yeah, you just died away there, Ross. Can you give us your question again?
What is a fumarole?
Okay.
Yeah, hi, Ross. We actually call them fumarole. Well, sorry, it's just a pronunciation thing. They're actually natural features that occur around in geothermal areas. Sometimes they have hot mud in them. Sometimes they have boiling water, which is ejected from them. And when they inject quite a way up in the air, they're sometimes called geysers. And sometimes they just steam. And basically they're a hole in the ground, which is connected to the underground geothermal system. They tend to involve just shallow water. So every time it rains, the rainwater runs down into these holes in the ground, the fumaroles. They're heated by the hot water that's there, and they steam quite prolifically. So after it rains, the best time to see what fumaroles are up to.
I think the most dramatic fumarole I've heard of was on the side of Mount Erebus in Antarctica, where somebody was walking up the side, somebody I know was walking up the side, and they were walking across the snow, and they looked down, and it was like looking in through glass. And there was a fumarole in the side, and it had melted the glacial ice. And they actually chipped a hole in the glass and the ice on top and got inside. It was like a glass house. And the only trouble was it was full of fumes, as you can imagine, so you couldn't stay in there very long. But it was like a small room. You could actually walk around inside, and it was warm with the steam coming up from below. Question 10, please.
My name is Simon
Conroll,
and my question is, does the flight waste meet demand for electricity?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Simon.
Simon, was it?
Yep.
Yeah, supply and demand. Basically, you can't store electricity. So supply always meets demand. If it doesn't, then we'll have brownouts or blackouts. Basically, Waraku or the geothermal stations, we're baseload stations. So we fit in into the bottom of the stack of generators, and we generate as much as we can all the time. Then they use the hydros, which tend to sit at the top of the stack, because they can be easily ramped up and down. And they tend to ramp up and down to meet the demand.
And what is a brownout?
A brownout is similar to a blackout. Blackout is basically a total area that's completely lost electricity, is switched off. A brownout tends to be an area where it's got a very low voltage, and they might have intermittent power cuts, but basically the electricity supply is not up to a standard that's acceptable for domestic house use.
Does the frequency change then? Yes. Sam's nodding. The frequency drops, which is a big problem. Okay, and that's 50 hertz, of course, as you keen physicists will know. Right, question 11, please.
Hello, my name is Dane Orchard, and I'd like to know how long will this power station be able to supply our energy needs?
Yeah, hi Shane. At the moment, this power station's probably been going for close to 45 years, and our projections at the moment with our studies of the resource here is we're looking to go for another 50 years at Waraki. Now we're actually in the process of building a new pipeline to supply the new Poipi station from the Waraki field, and so that's likely to have a similar sort of lifespan, and probably 20 to 30 years for the Ahuhaki power station. Generally, thermal stations are built for a lifespan of about 25 years, so by the time we run out of the resource, it will have worked its lifetime about four times over.
And a question from me, Sam. If you packed up and left here, when it happens sometime in the future, what will happen to the geothermal geysers and pools that were here once? Will they come back?
Yeah, there's quite a reasonable recharge in the Waraki geothermal system. So over time, all those natural features will return. So remove all the pipes, all the concrete bores. When we leave them, we have to fill them full of concrete, so they're as near to a natural formation as possible, so we don't leave open holes in the ground. And the pressure on the ground will build up again, and all those natural features will return.
And I suppose that leads us on nicely to question 12.
You get a. My name's Nathan Sidwell, and I was wondering, how environmental friendly is this operation? Does it produce any waste? If so, how's it removed?
Yeah, hi Nathan. Two of our power stations, the Poihipi and the Ahuhaki power station, are very environmentally friendly. They work on a closed cooling water system, so any water that passes through the power station is returned through a cooling tower, which it's cooled down and then reused back into the power station. There are slight H2S discharges, which H2S hydrogen sulfide occurs naturally in the steam, and that's that rotten egg smell that you get from geothermal areas. So a little bit of that's discharged to the area, but they're extremely environmentally friendly. Waraki is somewhat of an older station, and being built on the river, it actually uses river water for cooling. So some of that geothermal brine that goes through the turbines, condensed steam, is actually passed into the river. And with a tight resource consent conditions, we're actually having to make sure that any waste that we put into the river, and there is a few products like mercury is quite an important one that we have to find a way to take the mercury out of the steam. Very low traces, but it's still there. The H2S gets entrained into the water a little bit, so we have to make sure that we can remove that as well. And so out of the three stations, the Waraki power station being the oldest is probably the worst station we have. But we have with our new resource consents that are going to be issued possibly next year, we've got 5 years to basically reduce any of those discharges down to an acceptable level.
Okay, cheers.
And we're up to our last three questions. Number 13, please.
Yeah, how's it? It's Michael Guy speaking, and my question is, are there other renewable energy resources being used in the area? If so, which and how do they compare in terms of cost effectiveness and energy production?
Yeah, hi Russell. At the moment there's not a lot of other renewables in the area. With geothermal, it's considered as a renewable because of the modern power station, after you condense the steam down into water, we can actually re-inject that back into the ground and use that as recharge for the field. So it is considered as a renewable. Between Taupo and Napier, they're actually building a wind farm, which would probably be our closest, but that's not been constructed yet. And wind generation tends to be quite a lot more expensive than geothermal. Use a lot of smaller turbines, so it's a lot more plant to get the same generation. And you usually build them in remote areas up on top of hills, so constructing problems with construction and transporting materials, and then you have to get the electricity that you've generated out of there, so building transmission lines to very remote areas. The only other renewables that we sort of have around Taupo is a little bit of domestic solar energy, and it's just on people's house to heat hot water and that sort of thing.
Cheers.
And our second to the last question, please.
G'day, I'm Andrew James, and my question is, what kind of safety considerations are there when dealing with the electricity produced at the plant, and where is energy lost the most?
Okay, lovely, another lovely physics question there.
Yeah, hi, Andrew. The turbines generate electricity at 11,000 volts, and from there it's stepped up to 220,000 volts for the national grid. And whenever you're dealing with high voltage electricity, there's a lot of safety precautions that you have to go through. For a start, you have to have insulation areas. Any of the conductors have to be well shielded, that no one can get anywhere near them. So the high voltage insulation is really important. If we require to do maintenance on any of the electrical plant and electrical switchgear, like any other piece of plant requires maintenance from time to time, we have quite strict procedures where we go through where the plant is isolated, locked off on locks, so all points of supply to the piece of plant we're working on has been locked off. And then we actually go through a process where we test for voltage to make sure that there's no voltage there, and we use earthing clamps to make sure that the piece of equipment is down to earth and there's no possibility of it becoming live while it's being worked on. And all those areas, all those isolation points are locked off and they're attached to a permit, and the person who's actually working on the plant signs onto the permit that, that's been locked off and is safe to work on. As far as energy loss, in the whole process, the turbines tend to be the area where the most energy is lost. You have steam coming into the turbine, and they use the high-end heat to produce power for the prime mover, which goes through to the generator. But there's a lot of heat, a lot of latent heat, that basically is just lost to the cooling water. So the most inefficient part of the plant is the turbine itself. Once the prime mover, which is connected to the generator, the steam turbine, once it gets to the generator, there's very little in the way of electricity losses through the process. And that's one of the advantages of using high voltage electricity.
And last but not least, question 15.
Hi, it's Michael Bentley again. How big are the magnets used in the generators?
Yeah, this is a little bit out of my field. I'm more mechanically based, but I'll attempt to answer your question as best I can. The magnets themselves, basically what we do is we use electrical conductors. And hang on a minute, my phone's beeping. We'll just shut that up. Basically, we use a rotor, which we induce a current onto the rotor, and that produces a magnetic field. So we don't have permanent magnets. We use an exciter, which induces a current of about 300 amps into the rotor, and at a voltage of about 250 volts. That produces a magnetic field, which cuts through the conductors on the stator, and that induces a current into the stator windings at about 11 kV. That's about probably as much as I can tell you.
Well, tomorrow, it leads on nicely, Michael, because tomorrow we're going to go and have a look inside the power station, and we'll have a look at some of exactly those sorts of things that... you know, Sam was just talking about in his answer to your question. Now, great questions, guys. Came across really clearly. Excellent stuff. Now, what we're going to do from here, well, our first job is to stop for a short time because we're going to have an audio conference with your geographers. They're tied up today, as you know, but we're going to record that onto the web for you to listen to and other schools to listen to as well. And we've got some listening schools for that, as we have out there now. Now, also this afternoon, we're either going to have a look at the drill rig if it fires up. I can't believe that in an hour it might drill 40 metres through the surface, but we're going to have a look at that so that we can get some video of moving parts and watch it operating, so you get a better idea of how you actually drill holes in the Taupo volcanic zone. Remember to put any extra questions on the web board and read my diaries, have a look at the images, and enter the competition. And the videos as well. And with that, I'll say thanks, guys from Garran College Physics, and to Sam.